Can I just say something here to you folks today? Men are in trouble. Men are in deep weeds. And how do I know this truth? Because I've got me a gender-neutral haircut. That's how.
It's a good evening.
Don't cry victim to me. Everything we are around used to be is buried and gone. Now it's my turn to speak.
The views expressed on the following broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of KHLT, Take 12 Radio, or our affiliates. The opinions on this show should not be considered as medical, psychological, or professional advice, and are those of the host, co-host, and guest. Take 12 Radio and KHLT Recovery Broadcasting are not affiliated with any particular 12-step fellowship.
Welcome to Entitled to Overcome, Exploring Solutions for Life Today, a presentation of Take 12 Recovery Radio. And now, here are your co-hosts, Dave Fleming and the Monty Man.
And joining us, of course, from Huntington Beach, California, is Mr. Roger McDermott. Welcome to Solutions for Life Today with CADC Level 2, Mr. Dave Fleming. On the internet, there he is. If you're watching on YouTube, you see all of our smiling faces. And there, of course, is Roger and myself. And this is a presentation of Take 12 Recovery Radio. The topic on this episode of Solutions for Life Today is giving of ourselves. And why is it so difficult for guys to do that? Why is it so difficult for guys to open up about their feelings and share and give of themselves sometimes? Now, not everybody is that a difficult thing to do. Not every male out there struggles with that. But I got to tell you, I put this question out on social media last night. I got a ton of responses, and I'm going to be sharing some of those as we go on with the show here. But first, of course...
Hello and welcome to today's video, where we're asking the question, how do icebreakers break ice?
Well, that's a very good question. The best way to break the ice is with Dave and Monty's Icebreaker!
There it is! Boy, I got something for you guys. This is stuff that will never happen, not even if hell freezes over. Here we go. I'm going to run through
it pretty quick. It'll happen next week.
Not even if hell freezes over will this happen. Peace on earth, goodwill towards men. You can keep singing it, but it ain't going to happen. Peace on earth, goodwill towards women. mobs will stop being stupid. The national debt will be paid off. Politicians become honest. Politicians become competent. Everyone will make educated decisions when voting. You want me to go on? Things that will never happen if hell freezes over. The medical industry becomes honest. The banking industry becomes honest. The credit card industry becomes honest, et cetera, et cetera. Printer ink cartridges will no longer have a 200% markup. American corporations become loyal to America. Yeah. Payday loan services stop robbing people blind. Cable companies stop robbing people blind. Robocalls will go away. Do you get robocalls, Dave?
Yes.
Yes. Roger, do you? You get them?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. Here's something that'll never happen, even if hell freezes over. Telephone solicitors will go away. Spammers will go away. Junk mail will go away. Daytime TV shows will get some class. Preachers on TV will stop asking for money. Here's one. I love this one. When the children of celebrities stop writing humiliating tell-all books about their parents. Jehovah's Witnesses will leave people alone. Dogs will stop licking their private parts. God. Cats will actually, this is my favorite one. This will never happen, even if hell freezes over. Cats will actually give a hoot about their owner's wants. Weeds will respect your property line, and gophers will respect your property line. Those are just some things that will never happen, even if hell freezes over. What do you think, Dave?
Well, I got one that some people thought would never happen, but actually has.
Ooh, do tell.
Creed has gotten back together and going on tour.
Really?
Yes.
By the way,
reference to our opening song.
Our opening song, entitled To Overcome. Yeah.
Well, yeah. So they're overwhelmingly, they went and did this cruise, and it was so popular that they decided that they were going to get back together in tour. I don't know if they're going to stay together, but we'll see if they survive the tour.
Wow. That's cool.
That is what? Cool.
You know, you get all those strong personalities together in one place, and sometimes you can only be together for so long.
Right. Right. Well, I'll tell you what. I'd buy a ticket. I'd go see them.
Well, they're coming to Oregon.
Somebody else.
Can't remember the dates.
You know, I'd like to see. And they play, they tour together quite a bit, actually, Styx, Kansas, and I can't remember who the other guys were. Well, Styx and Kansas, both those guys tour together, on a pretty regular basis. And now Styx, of course, is without Dennis DeYoung, but Tommy Shaw and the rest of them are there.
Right.
But I got to meet Dennis DeYoung here a few years ago at a meet and greet at our fairgrounds, but it was Dennis DeYoung and the Music of Styx. That's how they had to title it, you know. Mm-hmm. But that was cool. My music attendance as far as concerts goes surrounded around everything Styx did. I absolutely love those guys and that kind of music. We really lived growing up, you guys. We lived in an era where music was just incredible, especially if you lived in California with, you know, Los Angeles and the San Francisco Bay Area and stuff like that.
Right.
Just amazing stuff. Well, anyway,
so I pulled up their tour and I don't see Oregon. I don't even really see anything really close. Iowa. Ohio.
No California either.
Minnesota.
I'm surprised.
California and San Bernardino, they've got. And Wheatland, there's a. Wheatland, of all places. If anybody knows where Wheatland is.
Where's
never
that?
Heard of it.
It's in the middle of the state, I think. It's like. Trying to use my map in my head. I think it's east. Or west, it's west of Sacramento.
Okay.
My mom used to live there. It's this little podunk town where it's all a bunch of farmers, and it's kind of
like
Brownsville.
Okay, so like towards Vacaville. Wow. And Fairfield and that kind of thing.
Probably. Yeah, it's this little tiny, you know, I think there's a college there. I think that's, you know, maybe why.
Well, there's Davis. There's
a certain part of it where there's a bigger population. But yeah, for the most part, it's just a small town.
Yeah, University of Davis is right in that vicinity. So maybe that's...
They're on the opposite side.
Oh, okay.
Off of 80, I believe.
All righty.
Past that all the time, heading out of California.
Let's get a bus together and go see Creed. All right. That wraps it up for the Icebreaker. We'll be back right after this.
Hey guys, this is Richie Supa, and you are listening to Take12Radio.com, recovery talk and positive music.
Hey, it's the Monty Man. You've heard us talk a lot about emotional sobriety here at Take 12 Recovery Radio. Well, 12 Essential Insights for Emotional Sobriety is Dr. Alan Berger's best book yet. Within these pages, he makes his stand in support of what Bill Wilson, co-founder of Alcoholics Anonymous, predicted would be the next frontier of the 12-step movement. This is a book you will want to keep handy for some time to come. That comes from our good friend Tom Rutledge. Listen, Tom would know. He's the co-host of the Emotional Sobriety Podcast along with Dr. Alan Berger. You can listen to that podcast by visiting us at take12radio.com and clicking on the Recovery Podcast Network's purple banner at the bottom of the page. For an autographed copy of 12 Essential Insights for Emotional Sobriety, visit Dr. Berger's website at abphd.com. This book is also available on Amazon.
If you could read my mind, love, what a tale my thoughts could tell. Just like an old-time movie about a ghost from a wishing well. In a castle dark or a fortress strong, with chains upon my feet, know that ghost is me, and I will never be set free as long as I'm a ghost you can't see.
Mr. Gordon Lightfoot, and the truth is we can't read your mind. Men are deep thinkers. They're deeper than they get credit for. But we can't read your mind, guys. We can't. If we could, what would we be seeing? What would we be hearing? And why is it so difficult for you to share and open up? So in the book, one of Dave's favorite books, The Man Within, Daily Devotions for Men in Recovery, for today's date, January 15th, 1 Thessalonians 2:8 says, we were well pleased to impart to you not only the gospel of God, but also our own lives. And it goes on to say, men need other men who will look them straight in the eye and open up their hearts and souls. The Apostle Paul didn't just share a message, the gospel, but he also shared his life. Men are not always comfortable sharing their lives. Often they don't understand what it is to share their hearts and souls. A man I met on an airplane had all the distinctions of a successful businessman. He seemed to have it all. Although we were total strangers, he shared about his life, his struggles with his teenage son, and how he longed to find a way to help his wife forgive him for his past unfaithfulness. Many men are involved in this man's life, looking to him as a kind of man they want to be. Few men would feel they had much to offer him. I shared parts of my life with him, and when the plane landed, out walked not a successful businessman and a counselor, but two men who had been encouraged by sharing deeply about their lives, not sharing answers, but sharing struggles. Christ gave his life. All he asks us is that we men share our lives with others. Lord, help me today to be real with friends and to give them the best part of my life. I love this part. Not sharing answers, but sharing struggles. So I put this question out there last night, kind of late last night, actually, when I was looking into some research about men and their inability to share with each other. So I thought, well, let's just ask the listeners what their thoughts were. And man, I got lots of answers back. So I'll read a couple and then we'll talk about this and then I'll share some more. So Patsy B from Australia said, I think of it when little boys fall down, they aren't supposed to cry. Be a big boy. You got this. As they grow, it just becomes more you're tough. Women are told the men are supposed to rule the roost, take care of everyone in the house. So I think women look to that and some decide they are to be told what to do. When my grandson was small, I let him cry until he was done. Now he is 12. He's a bit tender-hearted. I love this about him and he can be strong when needed. I think it boils down to not defining what makes a man a better man. I reckon love, compassion, helping others, and having a good God-loving heart. That's what makes us better people. Scott S. From Tangent says, it's a cultural thing that fathers, uncles, and grandfathers build into their boys when they are young, i.e., boys don't cry. stand your ground, keep your chin up, and many more. Stanley B. from Albany says, it may be it was never taught to us as men to share our feelings. I remember a stiff upper lip. Take it to your grave. Speaking on feelings makes you soft, and no woman wants a soft man. I don't know if Stanley's from Albany. But anyway, there's three responses. Comments, you guys? Why do you think... well, first of all, is it important that we learn how to share with each other and how to be supportive of each other and get real and beyond just surface stuff? Dave, what do you think?
Well, yeah.
Yeah, right?
I mean, I think it's important, but we have to learn how to do that because
we don't know how.
Well, I think I don't, for the most part, I don't think very many people are taught how to do that, male or female. I don't remember ever once having a conversation with any male role model in my life about any of this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You always hear things kind of down the grapevine or in society or whatever. You know, men are not supposed to cry, but then you all hear on the other side of that is if you are able to cry, it makes you more of a man. So it's like this, depending on what was taught in your culture of upbringing.
Yeah.
I guess you're going to go with until you discover something else. I always kept things to myself just because I don't trust anybody.
Hmm.
Why don't I trust anybody? Because mm-hmm. people weren't trustworthy. Why weren't they trustworthy? Because I didn't hang out with people that were trustworthy usually. And the few people that I did that were trustworthy, I still, you know, if they're still alive, I'm still friends with them today.
Let me interrupt just for a minute. Roger, can you click on your echo cancellation button? It isn't clicked on. I don't know if it'll work while we're recording.
It says this can't be changed while recording.
Ah, doggone it. Yeah, because we're getting an echo. Shoot. Okay. Well, we'll muddle through and...
I don't hear an echo.
I don't either.
Yeah, I was getting it. But it's not real bad. Okay. Sorry, listeners. Yeah, so you said, Dave, the trust factor. A lot of people responded with what you just said. Chuck S. said, women tend to use it against men when it becomes beneficial to them. Ooh, ouch.
You uses what?
What, opening up and sharing their deepest stuff. Candy H said the fear of not being the strong male figure that they are told to be.
So this goes back to the conversation about no one really knows who they are until they have some kind of life experience that forces them into that. And most of us in recovery can attest to that. Like, we don't really start figuring out who we are until we have to do so.
That's a really good point. That's a really good point.
Before, when I was kind of doing my own thing, I thought, you know, I'm going to go and, you know, I'm going in this direction. I'm going to be I'm going to retire at 34 as a real estate mogul with all this money. But the reality is I'm just kind of trying to figure out things on the go. I don't really know who I am or what my gifts are. I'm just following along what I see would be a path to stability, right?
Mm.
To be able to, you know, buy a house and, you know, have the stuff that I need for my family. And going through adversity and addiction and recovery, I find out what's really important. And I found out that the money part isn't the thing that's important. I need to figure out who I am.
Yeah.
And then I need to start being able to communicate like we're talking about, right? In a healthy manner, but with also people that I trust. I'm not just going to go and share everything, my deepest, darkest secrets to people I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Even in meetings, I'm going to test the waters. I'm not going to talk about my deep, dark secrets in a meeting. I'm going to talk about stuff in general. Even 19 years later, I don't pull out all my deepest, darkest secrets to talk about in a meeting. It's not necessary.
Nicole S. says, I think it's trust. So there you go. There's another one on trust. Paul H. says, speaking for myself, shame was probably the biggest reason. Also, being vulnerable wasn't a safe thing to do. It left me mentally, emotionally unprotected. So a lot of fear-based answers, a lot of,
right.
it's a trust thing. Roger, what do you think? Why was there ever a time in your life when it was harder for you to be more than surface and now it's not as hard?
Yes. So everything changed when I got into recovery.
Mm-hmm.
When I got into recovery, one of the concepts of recovery is to thine own self be true. I didn't even know what that meant. I was, my whole life, I was a constitutional liar. Even before I took my first drink.
Uh-huh.
And then after drinking and finding drugs and everything else, it got worse. So through the journey of getting to know God and getting to know myself, I came to realize that God knows everything about me anyway. So what am I lying about? And why am I afraid to explain the deepest, darkest secrets in my life, which drove me to drink and use, and then got exasperated because I did that? So today, I want to be to thine own self be true. I had to stop lying to me. And when I stopped lying to me, then I didn't have anything to hide from you. Because frankly, if you can't handle what happened to me, that's on you. It's not on me. I'm not here to prove anything to you, but I don't have any secrets anymore. And so I don't give you control to determine whether I'm good, bad, or indifferent.
Mm.
So I work hard to not have secrets. I like to be accountable, responsible, and transparent, and I never was before.
Yeah.
So in the context of what we all do and trying to help someone else, I'm happy to share my deepest, darkest secrets with them. And if there's a connection point for them, then they get to open up with me. And then we find grace and mercy of God, and we pray about it, and we apply principles to it, and we recover from a hopeless state of mind, body, and spirit. And lies will never allow you to do that. So if you've got something that you're hiding because you have some fear of something that will happen if you share it, then that's something that at least I had to learn how to work on and work through.
Mm-hmm.
And today I have tremendous freedom because I don't have secrets.
Tremendous freedom because you don't have secrets. That's a powerful statement.
Well, and you don't need to have secrets because you're not doing anything wrong, right? Because we're always doing the next right thing, whatever that is. At least we should be in recovery. So right. we don't have any secrets. So there's like that part doesn't come into play, but we can share our experience, strength, and hope right. from what we've gone through with others to help them move to where they need to be.
Yeah.
But those deepest, darkest secrets that many of us hold on to because of shame keeps us locked up into a place where I have to escape my reality by anesthetizing myself out of reality.
Right.
Like assessment of doctor's opinion, right? Even though we know it's injurious, we drink because we like the feeling it gets, and after a while we cannot decipher the truth from the false. Well, I want to live in the truth, and the truth is what sets me free. So I don't have any secrets. What do you want to know about me? I'll tell you.
Yeah, you know, we drink primarily for the effect. And, you know, a lot of people say, oh, well, you just like getting high. Well, you know what? It was way more than that for me. You know,
I
wanted to change the way I felt. Mm-hmm. It didn't matter if it was euphoric or not. Just change the way I feel. So I don't have to feel this. You know, even if I'm throwing right. up sick, I'm not focused on that. I'm focused on this instead. And so I'm not thinking about you. I'm not thinking about the pain or the anguish or the things I did because I'm medicating and I could be sicker than a dog the next day. and I'm sicker than a dog. All my focus is on that. That was even better than dealing with what was really going on, if that makes sense.
I had a pastor in my early on in my life. His name was Pastor Romaine. He was at Calvary Chapel. He was Chuck Smith's, you know, sergeant at arms. This guy was a master gunnery sergeant from the Marine Corps.
Hmm.
He was a man's man. And one of the things that he would tell us at a men's retreat, 100 men there, he said, "I love to see a grown man cry." And then he would follow that up by saying, "Real men cry."
Hmm.
And that isn't what you hear in our culture. And yet here's a guy that was a master gunnery sergeant in the Marine Corps.
Yeah.
You don't get any tougher than a master gunnery sergeant. So I never forgot that.
Wow.
You know, by the end of that retreat, he had 100 of us crying.
Wow.
I find that interesting, that term, right? About real men don't cry or real men cry. It's like, I can literally think about when I heard that, you know, early on, and then where I'm at now. It's kind of an equal amount, and I think it's dependent on who we surround ourselves with. If I surround myself with people who have that thought process of real men don't cry, then those are the people that I'm going to be around. Those are the people that I'm going to attract. Where if I do the other, right, real men do cry, then I attract more of those people. And people that are a little more stable.
Yeah. I was attracted by what he had to say.
Right. Yeah.
Because it broke down the fear of allowing my emotions to be shown to people, because I thought I was worried about what they might think of me. I don't even care about that anymore. I mean, I care about what people think about me, but I live by principles and the power of God and grace and mercy. So I try to do the right thing at the right time for the right reason. And if I want to cry, I'm going to cry because something strikes me at the heart, you know, the heart and soul.
Right.
So when we talk about emotional sobriety, for instance, one of the things that when I sponsor somebody and we get on that subject, they say, "Well, are you telling me that when somebody does this, I shouldn't feel angry and it shouldn't hurt me?" And I go, no, not at all. I mean, anger is not anger just means you have a sense of justice. It doesn't mean what other people do, say, feel, and think doesn't hurt or doesn't kind of, you know, but it doesn't knock you off your emotional center. It used to knock me off. It doesn't anymore. I can feel the disgust or have a opinion about something or feel hurt or embarrassed or disappointed, and I can feel it. And it doesn't rule me. It doesn't knock me off. Because what, do you feel hurt? Yeah. Are you okay? Absolutely. You know, and I think in the recovery community, sometimes we feel like it's either or. Like you either, you know, suck it up and toughen up and those things, you don't feel any of those things because you're so put together now. Or you're too sensitive and, you know, you need to, you know, not take yourself so seriously, you know, things like that, you know, and I think we can feel these things and not have it destroy us if we learn how to be emotionally sober. Ray L. from Santa Rosa, California said, hero complex. We take care of others and ourselves. Men do. Heroes don't ask for help. We can do it ourselves. Yeah. Yeah. I know men like
that. How's
that
working out for you?
Yeah, right. And I'm thinking, I'm actually really good friends with this guy. And we moved up together in the scouting program years ago. And he and I are both Vigil Honor members of Order of the Arrow. We're both Eagle Scouts. Lots of awards, all that kind of stuff. Lots of accolades. All this stuff that makes you look like you got it together, right? And I think about that, you know, sometimes I think that can be a little damaging, you know, the more you get the awards and the acknowledgments and all the more some men will feel like it's absolutely vital. They don't show weakness. because they've got this persona that they've got to keep up. And I think we got to be careful with that. Frank D says, men are made to feel like they are lower than dirt and that they are stupid, unintelligent creatures that have little or nothing to offer. Have you watched any sitcoms in the last 15 years? Men are made out to be idiots. Doesn't do much for a guy's self-confidence. He's right about media.
Change what you watch.
There's a lot of stuff though on that boob tube that makes men look ridiculous, including commercials. Have you noticed
that?
Then
don't watch it. No, turn it off.
But I'm just saying it's there.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's there.
I agree.
It doesn't, unless we give it power, and it's not made of truth. I mean, I don't look to find out my who I am by watching some sitcom.
No. Of course
not. I laugh at it because it's funny, but it's not who I am.
But you know, Roger, but you know who it affects? It affects people that in their journey, and let's talk about the recovery community for a minute, in the journey of their recovery aren't at a place yet where they can emotionally hold on to their true self. They're not there yet. And so when they walk into a meeting and somebody says, you're not to share, you have nothing to say, you're new, stuff like that, it can crush a guy.
Sure.
You know?
I'm agreeing with you. However, my point is that our job, the code of the recovery program we're in is that love and tolerance. So if you tell somebody the truth, you have to do it in love. Otherwise, it's
absolutely
brutal. People walk in our doors and they've been beaten up their whole life, including beating themselves up.
Yeah.
The last thing they need to hear when they come to a meeting to be encouraged is to get beaten up and told to shut up and you don't know anything because you're stupid. I don't need to hear that.
No.
That's like watching a sitcom making men
exactly.
Look like crap. Go to a different meeting.
Exactly.
Yeah.
If you read what God says about who we are, it's none of those things.
And, you know, what this Frank D says doesn't do much for a guy's self-confidence. It's not supposed to. It's meant to tear you down. It is meant to attack you. It's meant to do that. If you're looking at it to build you up, you are going to be great. It ain't going to happen. You're right. Change the channel, whether it's literally or the people you're hanging out with, right?
One thing I just want to say with the whole, you know, sharing and being vulnerable in meetings, what I've seen over the years is two things happen, right? You've got that with the people that are struggling, you've got either somebody shares way too much or they don't share at all and they don't even go to a meeting because they had one bad experience from a meeting that someone said, oh, sit down and shut up, you have nothing to share.
And they never go
so
back.
So now I don't want to go to a meeting ever again, to this somebody being like telling all of their deep, dark secrets, like we call it vomiting, right?
Yeah.
You don't have, you go over through the years of not being able to have anybody to talk to, and all of a sudden you have people to talk to and you think is a safe place, and you start vomiting everything of your life story, and then people start gossiping and using it against you. Where there should be what needs to happen, I think, is what I try to tell people, is you gotta stick your toe in the water, right? You gotta test out the waters, you gotta find your safe space, your meeting that you fit with, right? And then share a little bit at a time and move that way. And you don't need to share every little specific detail. You can talk about things in general, and sometimes that takes a little practice to do that, but that way you kind of find where you're supposed to be and then move forward in how much you're going to share with people, and get a sponsor or, you know, right, a recovery mentor or whatever's in your area.
Yeah, that's really good word, Dave. People need to really pay attention to that. And you know, there are several applications of the 90 meetings in 90 days thing. Now, yeah, okay, for you guys that are purists, yeah, that isn't in the book and all that kind of thing. And it's a treatment thing and it's a court thing and blah, 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 blah. But try to find some wisdom in that. Because the deal is, I can't make a judgment call on something, whether it's a church, a Rotary Club, a Boy Scout troop, until I've experienced it more than once.
Right.
particularly if I'm not healthy in my thinking and I'm looking for what's going wrong anyway, I'm going to find it, you know. So if I go to several, like Dave is saying, it's okay to shop for a meeting, right? It's okay to shop for a home group. I mean, Marcia and I, we're in the process right now of shopping for a new church for a variety of reasons. Nothing's wrong, but we feel a little orphaned right now. And so we are looking for a place we can worship where we can contribute. Oh, look at the kitty. What's your kitty?
This is Rowdy.
Rowdy. See, if you're not watching on YouTube, you miss out. There was Rowdy the kitty. But we're looking and we're checking some things out. Now, if we just went to one church, went, I don't like what that guy said, and then never went back to church again, shame on us, right? So you got to give things a chance.
We're missing out.
That's right.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
By not finding where we fit, if we're just letting the bad experience win, or that whatever, we're doing ourselves a disservice or disjustice. We need to go out and find our people, our tribe, so to speak.
Yeah, exactly. I find that when I have those conversations, there are things in the book. It doesn't say 90 meetings in 90 days, but if you read Dr. Bob's Nightmare, it says if you put 50% of the effort you were used to using and getting another drink or drug into this program, it will never fail you. So put 50% of what you used to do into meetings and watch what happens. And it says you're supposed to say what happened, you know, what it's like, what happened, what's it like now, you know, what changed you, how was it, how did it used to be? And if you go to meetings, and I tell people, if you don't like what you're hearing, so if you listen at every meeting, you're going to hear two things. One, things that you'll never do, and two, things that you should be doing, and relate to the people who are offering something positive. And when you go to a meeting, put your hand up and bring something to the table that shares about your experience, strength, and hope. And don't get stuck in the problem.
Hmm.
And if you do that, you can change the format. You can change the demeanor of a meeting. And you'll hear lots of people share it. I have no connection there, but I don't leave the meeting because now I'm going to put my hand up and talk about what the program has done for me. And that's like, don't get pissed off at what you heard. There's all kinds of sick people in every meeting. But we don't do what they do. We do what the people do that have recovered.
Yeah.
I hear a lot. And I know, especially in the last few years, I've heard people that actually will go to meetings. They say all they do is talk about drinking or using drugs.
Right.
And I said, yeah, I used to think that too. And I'm not saying that this is you, but when I was thinking those thoughts, it was because I was still in my addiction and I still wanted to drink or use and didn't want to quit. And so the bottle under the seat of my truck is calling out to me, hurry up, you MF, let's go. Are you done yet? Right?
Yeah.
But when I went back years later and I started going to meetings, I actually did the 90 meetings in 90 days. At least that was the plan.
Right.
I did meetings every day for almost 2 years. But it was then when I discovered, like, I'm going to show up and I'm just going to keep quiet and listen. And then I start sharing. And then what I'm hearing is like people trying to like navigate through life, how to deal with life on life's terms, positives and negatives. And how do I get through this without drinking or using? When I'm in that mindset, when I want to do something different and stop using, that's what I hear. I don't hear the war stories and I don't hear the people talking to all they talk about is drinking. The only time I ever heard that is when I was still in my addiction and I did not want to quit. Only I didn't realize I was in that, right? Mm-hmm. Because I was like complying with the courts or probation or whatever else at the time.
Yeah. Yeah. This comes from a 28-year-old gentleman, Yass. He says, I think that most guys are too concerned about what the other person might think about them to really open up. Like, for example, if you tell someone on a date that you're really emotional and you cry watching a sappy movie, that person might find it either cute or completely judge you. So we hide our feelings to avoid being judged too soon. Yeah, okay.
Well, is that like the first 5 minutes in the first date?
Maybe.
Or the fifth date. If it's the fifth date, you need to find another person because that person is probably not someone you should be with if that's how they're looking at you.
Well, I will tell you this. I have never had a problem crying at a sappy movie. I love chick flicks. I love emotionally. I remember watching Love Story years ago, right? Bawled my eyes out. I had no problem hiding that. In fact, when if we're watching a sappy movie today, if we're watching a sappy movie and my kids are over and they're all grown and married, they will all look over me in unison. They're seeing if Dad's crying.
That happens to me all the time. All the time. How about Dr. Zhivago?
I'm
at the theater with my, I don't know if I was married or we were dating, and we were watching that movie. I was bawling my eyes out at the end of the movie when Omar Sharif falls on the sidewalk as she drives away in the bus. And so I'm crying like a baby. I couldn't get up and leave the theater, and the lights came on. My wife's like going, are we going to leave? Or
I'll tell you the one that really got me was just a couple of years ago. A movie came out with Timothée Chalamet and Steve Carell called Beautiful Boy, and it was about a father who was the father of a meth addicted teenager, which was played by Timothée Chalamet, and Steve Carell played the dad. Both incredible actors, both of these guys. And there's been a lot of movies out about drugs and alcohol abuse, and going all the way back to Jack Lemmon and Days of Wine and Roses to, Come Back, Little Sheba, things like that. There, some of them are pretty accurate. Some of them are kind of accurate. But this thing, when it came to meth addiction, was spot on. I don't know who helped them with their research, but when I left that theater, I was shaking and I was weeping, and I had no problem sharing it. And Marsha was like, "Are you okay?" I go, "No." That was so accurate. So I don't have any problem with that. Adam, age 28, says, just because we don't sit around talking about our feelings and gossiping, I wonder if he's referring to women there, if that's a jab. He says, it doesn't mean we don't open up. I think I've always been pretty open with the girls that I've dated. Okay. Jay, age 25, says, I think guys are bad at sharing our feelings because we're bad at handling rejection. Basically, boys are more sensitive than people realize, so they prefer not to open up in the first place. They need to confirm a lot of different things before they'll open up their heart. Interesting. Yeah. Here's a dad, 58 years old. I don't think men have a harder time opening up, but I think we have a harder time being vulnerable. Good point.
What's the difference?
I can open up on a surface level. You know, I can admit to something on a very surface level, but when I get down to causes and conditions and things like that of that issue, then I'm being vulnerable, I think. What do you think, Roger? What's the difference between opening up and being vulnerable?
I don't know if they're different for me, but I would say that being vulnerable is eliminating the power you give other people to determine how you feel about yourself. If I'm going to open up and share something about me that's deep and emotional and heartfelt, these words that men don't normally use,
I'm
not sharing it to find acceptance from somebody else. I'm sharing it because I'm telling you what happened to me and how I've grown from that, or what experience that I've come out of that situation with, and where do I find my hope now. Those kinds of I'm all about victory. I'm not about staying in the trauma. And I think when I share things like that, overcoming those issues and being vulnerable, I find my identity in Christ, and I'm not worried about how you think or feel about what I just said. And I also have found over the years that when I'm like that, it is attractive to people who are in similar state, emotionally or mentally, psychologically, what have you.
Yeah.
When they find someone that opens up and you're becoming vulnerable, people who are in that same state want to come talk to you about it. And I'm like happy to share it with them.
Yeah. Yeah. It's part of with the title of the devotion, giving of ourselves. When you give yourself away like that, people will come to you. People will want what you have. I want to share what... go ahead, Dave.
Well, I was just going to say what I find in counseling, at least for me, I know this isn't probably for a lot of people, but I have to share my own experience, strength, and hope with people, no matter on what level, right? So when I'm doing an assessment, even if someone's having trouble opening up a little bit, I'll share a little story of my own personal experience that can relate to that. So it will help them feel comfortable and maybe help them to
That's exactly
settle in and be more.
Did. Yeah.
What's that?
I was going to say, that's exactly what my sponsor did with me when I did a fifth step. When I got to all these things that were troubling, challenging.
You start stammering, hurtful. You start being reluctant on what you want to share. I mean, you can tell that with people.
And he jumped right in and shared the same stuff. Then we laughed and cried, and there was no power in what I was saying.
Yeah.
He said, oh, that's what you did? Let me tell you what I did. And boom, suddenly you're joined by our character defects, and you have to go through those to find virtues. Because I didn't go to AA with any virtues. I went there full of character defects.
Do tell.
Right.
Yeah, right? I didn't go in there walking in virtuous, even though I thought I was.
Hi, I'm Roger, and I'm virtuous.
Yeah. Well, I had a guy share with me one time early on, I don't know how many weeks or months I had, but when I heard people share in a meeting, I wouldn't put my hand up unless I go, oh, I can top that. That's nothing. Let me tell you what I did. Or, oh my gosh, I can't top that. So I was either less than or worse than. So I had this profound spiritual share, I thought. And a guy next to me leaned over and said, what are you, the poster child of AA? And for a day or two, I thought that was a compliment. Because I thought, yeah, picture of me on the wall. This is how AA is done. It wasn't a compliment at all. It was like, are you serious? What you just shared? Well, it took me a while to understand that.
Right.
But that's how I thought.
Right.
That didn't make it true, but I thought I was full of truth.
Right. Oh, I love it.
Well, my point is like when I get, when people, I don't see, like, I feel like counselors should be more like this. And I know that most of them are taught not to do that. Like, you're not allowed to like share anything personal or share anything. You're just supposed to keep it about them. But I can't counsel like that. Like,
you're right.
There's no way.
You're right.
And
you're...
so I listen to what they say, and then I do my best to do what I do best, right? And I don't share all the details, but I, like I said earlier, I try to do it so that people will feel comfortable and will open up and feel a connection, because that's the thing I always hear is like, They cannot make a connection with anybody because, one, right, they haven't gone through what I've gone through. Like, every person I've ever talked to that comes into treatment, I can't talk to somebody that hasn't gone through addiction. Well,
exactly.
I have to say, I share with them. I say, well, you know, we don't necessarily. There are some people that can relate because they've had people in their lives gone through addiction. So they can share on some level, but I don't have to actually use a drug to understand where you're coming from. And then I also share, what I've gone through that can relate to them. But because a lot of people have this misconception of counselors in the field. And I don't know. I just feel like we got to, it's the same thing we talked about before with meetings, right? We got to be more proactive and be the change we want to see in the world.
Yeah.
So hopefully we won't have to always have these conversations about, you know, people's struggles. We'll just be able to do these things that we need to do to get to the next level.
So
that makes any sense.
Yeah, it does. And yeah, you're right. I mean, we are taught, one of the basic rules of thumb, so to speak, is don't share too much about your own stuff. And, you know, it can be tricky because there are guys, I've seen this happen where a person in the field as a professional, where the thing will flip on them and the client ends up counseling the counselor. Now that's wrong.
Right. Right?
And I think there's a fear of that happening. And so they say, well, you know, don't do that. But I'm with you. I think that a counselor worth his weight is going to be able to do that without it flipping. And that's all. Maybe
you got to be able to see if that starts to happen.
If it starts to happen,
all of a sudden, your clients start trying to be the junior counselor. You gotta correct them and set them straight.
So
get it back on track.
I had a drug and alcohol counselor when I went to outpatient years ago. Bless his heart. We're good friends now, but he was a rookie, and then years later he actually became the director of the place that I went to. And it was funny because Marcia would sit in on you know, like the family part of it, right? She would go, man, you had that guy wrapped around your finger. You were counseling him. You were controlling the whole thing. I was like, yeah, I know. just part of being a manipulative drug addict, right? Oh my goodness. So Tom W. says, when we open up about our lives, we make ourselves vulnerable, speaking to what you were saying, you guys, possibly even giving others information that can be used to harm or otherwise undermine our relationships or social standing, even used to manipulate others' opinions of us beyond the scope of our awareness. Yeah, it's a risk. But
you know what? If I tell my story, it's my story, and you have no power over me once I tell my story. You can't use it against me. It has no power over me, and which means you have no power
right.
if you want to use that information, because it's already right. I've already dealt with
it's
it.
It's already out there.
It.
It's out there.
It's already done.
It's out there.
That's
know.
The way it was, not the way it is.
There you go.
Yep.
There you go.
And,
you
know, that says more about that person that's trying to manipulate social standing, telling your stuff, than it does about you. Because it says that you're taking control, taking responsibility for your stuff, and that person's just trying to manipulate for his own purposes.
Right. And I don't think that way anymore.
That they can't. They think that no one can see that.
It's
ridiculous.
Yeah.
And I, you know, when I hear people share about you haven't walked in my shoes, and I go, well, let's see, let's talk about that, because what does that mean? I didn't stick a needle in my arm, or I didn't do blow until it almost killed me. No, but. How did you feel after that? Incomprehensible demoralization. Ah, I've been there.
Been there, yeah. Yep.
I've been lonely. I've lived in the dark when it was sunshining outside. I've lived in paranoia. It's the drug, the needle, the snort, the whatever. That's a symptom.
The symptoms. Just
of a
symptoms.
Spiritual malady. Yeah. I understand how you feel, and I didn't put needle in my arm. So what are we talking about here? The solution or... A piece of the problem.
Yeah.
Yeah. A symptom.
So to review really quickly here, here's five just talking about surface stuff. Here's five surface reasons that men have a hard time sharing. Old patriarchal habits die hard. Many men were raised with the belief that showing emotions makes them appear weak or less masculine. Number two, bad past experiences. Memories can be powerful. If a man had a negative experience when opening up to someone in the past, he might become guarded. Number three, fear of rejection. Men often fear that if they open up emotionally, the other person may not like what they have to say. Number four, fear of being judged. Many guys worry about being judged if they reveal their innermost thoughts. We care about what people think, and opening up leaves us vulnerable to criticism. And the last one, fear of vulnerability. Men generally dislike feeling vulnerable, and discussing deep emotions puts us squarely in that position. So the common denominator in all those, fear, 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 fear.
And what is fear?
False evidence appearing real. It's right. Not real, guys. It's the enemy of your soul trying to shut you down because he doesn't want you to heal.
The antithesis to that is face everything and recover.
Yes, absolutely.
False evidence appearing real, or face everything and recover.
Yeah,
make the decision.
Which focus are you gonna put on it? Mm-hmm. And I refuse to live a fear-based life. No, yeah. No. What are you gonna do? Worst you can do is kill me, and then I've got an eternal life with my Lord, yeah, and Savior. Whoop-de-doo.
Right. It's like I always ask, well, how big is your God? Big,
yeah,
problem, little God? Little problem, big God.
But that's not to say that if you have difficulty and you're struggling in this area, that there aren't understanding people that'll help you move through that.
There are, absolutely.
So because I know some of you are listening around and going, yeah, but you don't get it. You don't know my situation. No, I don't. But I know the core issue is we have a God-shaped hole and we're trying to fill it with everything else. But, and I know that the solution is, and that's a relationship with this amazing power that we call the divine. I don't need to know your details to be able to say me too. You know, the Me Too movement don't got anything on us 12-steppers. I'll tell you that right now. Uh-oh, just got canceled. All righty. Closing thoughts, Dave.
Just stick your toe in the water.
Oh, I like that.
Start to do something.
Stick your toe in the water. Yeah. Roger, closing thoughts?
Do the right thing at the right time for the right reason. Pray about everything, worry about nothing, and enjoy the journey, because you'll come out of it better than you were when you started.
Wow. Yeah. Well, our closing song this week is by Jason Gray, and it is so appropriate for this. The name of this song is "The Wound Is Where the Light Gets In." Here's Jason.
I was halfway up the mountain when the rocks I held gave away. I came tumbling like an avalanche to the bottom where I lay. And with the taste of blood and the twist of bone, my healing could begin. 'Cause the wound is where the light, the wound is where the light, the wound is where the light gets in. I have stood there like a hostage with a knife held to my vein, captive to the poison that I took to numb the pain. 'Cause everybody wishes they were born with thicker skin, but the wound is where the light, the wound is where the light, the wound is where the light gets in. It's tricky how the heart works when the breakups and the big jerks make us never want to hurt that way again. Maybe I'm naive, but in every scar I see, the place where love is trying to break in. 'Cause the wound is where the light gets in. The scars they don't disguise. You can pick out a real sinner by the kindness in their eyes. So if you're stumbling in the dark and bleeding at the shore, remember the wound is where the light, the wound is where the light.
light. The wound is where the light gets in. The wound is where the light. The wound is where the light. The wound is where the light gets in.
The positive music of Mr. Jason Gray. For more of his music, visit his website at jasongraymusic.com. Hey, listen, if you've enjoyed this podcast, we would encourage you, if you have not done so already, to subscribe for fun and for free. Visit our website at take12radio.com and subscribe on any of the podcasting platforms listed there. Until our next broadcast, this is the Monty Man, along with Dave Fleming and Roger McDermott, reminding you that because of God's great grace and love, you are entitled to overcome.
This has been a broadcast of KHLT Recovery Broadcasting.